This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivisuthi. It's a Friday. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with us. How are you today, George?
I'm very good. I'm very excited. It's not raining outside.
It isn't at all, actually, today. And you must be excited. I mean, you have worked with this very prominent individual we have in the studio with
Indeed.
Us today. Back in the day, George.
Back in the days when I was serving the country very well.
But you still are.
Oh, I am.
In a very different capacity. You just make more money now.
And at the same time, trying to kind of like, save mankind in different ways.
I'm sure.
That's mankind.
Okay.
That's right.
All right. We have an interesting topic today that we're going to be discussing. It's a study that came out of The Lancet that was published, Imperial College London, together with WHO. Mm. And they found that the South Korean women will be the first in the world to have an average life expectancy above 90. And, you know, they have done the study, analyzed the lifespans of 35 industrialized countries. And this is what they found, the South Korean woman. Now, why the South Korean woman? And, you know, how about in Malaysia? Yeah. I do have some numbers here.
What's happening to the men? And is it something that we're interested in as well?
Joining us today, Dr. Philip Poy, a consultant geriatrician. Welcome to the show, Dr. Philip. How are you today?
Thank you very much, Mira. Mm-hmm. I'm fine. And it's good to see George and you in person again.
In person again. That's right. So, you know, he's not kind of like this virtual character now. So we were working together about, I don't know, 7 years ago?
But he stayed the same.
He's still the same. Well, you look great for, you know, for your age, Dr. Philip. I'm not sure how old that is, but, you know, it's all right. Yes, you just retired from University of Malaya.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you spotted that very well.
What's kept you going?
Kept me going in University of Malaya?
No, since retiring.
Oh, well, I've been busy, for sure, having a new job looking after my mom. Mm-hmm. And keeping busy with teaching the students as well. I'm still on part-time basis working at the University of Malaya. Yeah. So teaching them and guiding the postgraduates to move on a little bit further.
Mm-hmm. Philip, how long were you with University of Malaya?
Almost 25 years.
Wow.
That's
dedication,
a long time.
Right?
Absolutely. And you're looking after your mother now?
In part, yes. Okay. We've had help, of course.
Yeah, but still, you know.
I can't say it's single-handed.
But still, you know, after retiring to have to look after your mother, the older person. I mean, you're tired yourself. You know, you want to do your own thing. But, you know, you're the sandwich generation. The generation what George and I are probably going to be in not too long from now. Making sure that our children have an education. Making sure our parents are okay. And not forgetting ourselves because we're getting older.
We have to worry about ourselves.
It is a very important topic. I mean, you know, BFM actually has got Health and Living event coming out addressing some of these issues of urban happiness. And
exactly.
With this,
right? One of the panel discussions is your team from University of Malaya, actually. Dr. Tan Mo Pin,
yes.
Neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina, Dr. Lim Shin Young, and Dr. Bharati.
Yeah, to address this very issue of this sandwich generations and looking after the, you know, aging parents, and then at the same time, you know, has to look arrange for your next generations as well, and to see them see through the path of life.
Focus on Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's.
Indeed.
Actually. All right. So, very much up your alley, Dr. Philip. But you know, why do you think the South Korean woman is going to live up to above 90? What has she done so correct that I am not up there?
That's right.
You might still get there. I mean, it's just an average.
As a nation?
Yes. Well, it's just an average life expectancy. So you can actually guess that most of us will reach there eventually. Because at this moment in time, even in Malaysia, if you reach 60 like now, at this age, you can still expect to live up to about 80.
Yeah, because, you know, it used to be the retirement age is like 60 and then being pushed forward. And this is exactly what this whole paradigm shift, really, isn't it? In Malaysia, what is our life expectancy, you know, comparatively?
Okay, in average, it's about 73 for men and about 77 for women.
Right.
But there are just some differences amongst the races. We could talk about it later, I guess.
Yes.
But I think we're moving there as well, because I'm seeing in the wards when I first came back to Malaysia. This was in the early 90s.
Okay.
And that would be, you know, the wards would be filled by those days, old people would be about 70, maybe a few 80-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But now we're seeing a lot of 80-plus, 90-year-olds, and they're getting up there. We've seen a few 100-year-olds as well.
And we're also doing intervention on older people as well, right? Right. Operations, and then because... you can't just, in the old days, kind of I said, oh, well, you're old, you know, we don't really do anything, because now the science, the medicine has allowed us to do that.
Safely,
that's right. Okay, so what the interesting thing about this, as Amira pointed out, like, what exactly is South Korea doing so well? Because at the moment, if I'm not wrong, and in Malaysia ranks something in the middle, about 100, or, you know, it's kind of like a, in the middle amongst all the nations in the world, and Singapore kind of like accelerated into something like in the region of about number 4, number 5. Japan's always taking the top spot, and what is the South Korean doing suddenly that overtakes everything? Because it's not too long ago that South Korea wasn't exactly
And Japan was always on top.
That's right.
What's happened to Japan?
The secret is Japan's still up there on top, and the basic thing is that you'll notice that all these countries that you've just mentioned, George, are the ones that have very few children.
Right.
Their families are shrinking much faster than other families.
In a way, aging nations.
Yeah, that's right. They are actually having a larger number of people who are reaching the aged group faster. So Singapore's got about 20% of people over the age of 65, whereas we've got about 7%.
So wouldn't it not be a bad thing that, when you have a country that is not reproducing, not replacing the population, and then you have this, a wave of older, population that is heading towards 90s and 100s, and then isn't that kind of a bit worrying?
Well, it's worrying to some, and it's opportunity for others.
Right, okay.
So,
elaborate.
If you are a government official in the Treasury, you'll say, oh my goodness, there's a huge number of elderly people. They're non-productive, i.e. they're not producing for the country.
Not economically productive.
That's right. And they could be a drain, in that way. But for others, it's an opportunity, because then the baby boomers, they've accumulated wealth in many ways and they can afford to spend. So they actually bolster the economy by spending, and they actually are able to have a higher living standard, set up retirement homes and, live a very comfortable life. So it's opportunity for some, and not so good for maybe the powers to be, because they have to worry about the how much money there is left in the coffers to pay for the healthcare. Mm-hmm.
And
so
also,
we have to get ready for that.
Yeah, well, and also, we presumably that will be eventually a shrinking population.
Absolutely. Yeah, producing.
Producing, because whenever, you actually have, in my days, my mum had 10 siblings in her families, and then dad's side also 10 siblings. Now to our side, we have 4. And then now, on average, people have 1.2 or something like that, right? Okay.
But how did Japan drop in terms of rankings?
Well, it's basically South Koreans have reduced their family sizes. They've also had improved nutrition, education, and now more and more South Koreans are educated. I think Samsung Incorporated has actually contributed a lot to helping a lot of people move up in the value chain. I mean, in terms of the fact that they can actually spend money. You see more Koreans everywhere around the world.
Philip, I think we have many South Korean who lives in KL.
Yes.
They're probably going to join the conversation, because a lot of people probably going to join the conversation to talk about why are people living longer. I tell you, some of them probably will ring up and say it's the ginseng and the kimchi that actually keeps them going.
Japan was doing quite well. But as you said, so education, nutrition have been, contributing
and
factors. But I would think that Malaysia, mm-hmm. education and nutrition, we know very much, quite a bit about it. So
maybe
then,
too abundance of that.
I don't know. But okay. But, our Minister of Health, I remember he sharing this with me, that the average lifespan during independence, at the time of independence in Malaysia, was just about 55.
Correct.
And we've done well.
Over 60 years, less than 60 years, we have range of
lifespan
50,
has increased by 73 to 77. Mm, so that's really not bad at all. We could do better.
We could. The difference is, in the Korean scenario, just going back to Korea, mm-hmm. you remember, if you remember your history, they had a civil war. a Korean War in the early 50s. And that was a time of austerity. A lot of people had little to eat, and they went through a tough life there. And I think that created an ability for them to live simply and eat well later to maintain their life, you know. And I think a lot of people that overeat when they are younger, they have a problem. And because they continue to consume too much, I think that's where Malaysia's trying to catch up here. We are actually feeding our kids too much.
So
the US is actually
quite low down.
Is happening to them. They perform so poorly because they almost have the lowest life expectancy of rich countries by 2030.
Yeah, amongst all the
countries.
And that
theory makes sense.
Well, in a way it does, because the other thing that makes a difference in life expectancy is the reduction in communicable diseases, infectious diseases. That number has almost halved in some places. That's really raising their life expectancies.
Okay, our non-communicable diseases is going up, George. What do we do now? We're the fattest nation in Southeast Asia. No. We lead in terms of diabetics.
Right. It is worrying because, you know, like Philip was saying, that when we have aging nations who are burdened with diabetes, heart condition and thing, it is going to be an ill-laden aging nation. Then that will be a very terrible state that we'll be in.
Absolutely. I think that's one thing we've got to get used to, because if we're not ready for that, we're going to have a lot of problems. You see, now hospitals are geared for the acute serious illness, the infections, the such like. But they're not ready for the slow chronic degenerative diseases that we're going to face in the future, because we're going to have more old people. You're going to have to redesign hospitals and refashion how we deal with all these things.
And we're going to hear in
2035, we will be an aging nation, which means 15% of the population will be 60 years and older. Yeah. 2035. Some would argue that it's going to happen earlier. Would you agree with me?
I'm going to be there.
You're not the population at large. You're not the 15% by yourself. But, you know, 2035 is not far away, actually. No. Okay, we have a caller. Paul, how are you? Paul, this is Paul Jambunathan calling us.
Hi,
how are you, Paul?
Good afternoon, guys. What an aging question.
Yeah.
The question I have is this. Mm-hmm. Actually, as we're getting older and more of us are staying older longer, staying alive longer, there are psychological needs that develop as well, psychosocial needs as we age. Now, all well and good that science and medicine is actually meeting those needs, meeting the medical needs, the cellular needs.
Indeed.
But are we preparing the younger population? Are we preparing society at all to care and meet these psychosocial needs as we get older? The education system doesn't have it. The medical curriculum doesn't have it. And that's why Meera often has the question, the lives of the carers are going to be in all kinds of disparaging and all kinds of incongruences.
Yeah,
indeed.
So the question is, are we meeting the psychosocial needs as we get older, and are we preparing people for it? Thank you very much.
Great.
Paul, before you go, you work very much. You have exposure to this. What have you experienced when it comes to dealing with the psychosocial needs of the elderly?
The initial issue is in identifying it, understanding it, and then passing it downwards, backwards, down the generation. And all the curriculum needs to change, in my opinion. Not just med school, but primary school. The fundamental processes within the family needs to understand. We're getting a 2-year-old child dealing with a great grandfather. I don't have a great grandfather, but nowadays we're going to be looking at great great grandfathers hanging around as well.
Yeah.
Now, how do we deal with all of these issues and the aging mind, the aging psychosocial needs? It's not just psychological, psychosocial. And it's painful. Honestly, it's painful. And families break up because of it. What can we do?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Paul. Thanks for that.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Paul raised a fantastic question. Yeah. Are we ready for it? I mean, as far as I see it, you know, there are several aspects. Are we ready for it? I mean, with your 25 years of, you know, experience working in a government hospital, you know, medically, do we have enough care of elderly healthcare profession to provide this care? Number two, are we saving enough to live so long? Number three, are the family members prepared to look after us?
You know, well, let's just go with Paul's question first. The psychosocial needs.
Psychosocial.
What did you think?
Well, Paul's got a very good point, and that's a problem that we have swept under the carpet most of the time. And I see them in crisis. I see the elderly coming to me in crisis, and it's usually because they are very lonely, sometimes depressed, and definitely fed up with living. You know, when I say, oh, you can last another 10 years, I say, no, I don't want to last 10 years.
So sounds like my mother, actually.
Well, it is a true
I am a good
scenario.
Child,
that's
however.
Right, yeah. You know, I mean, Well, in some scenario, it's quite a sad situation to be in, right? You know, medically, physically, you are able to proceed, and then are we ready?
So, what do you say to them when they say, I don't want to last another 10 years?
Yeah, what do you say?
Well, you say you got to convince them that life's worth living. But the problem is, you have to also convince the kids that life's worth being with your mom and dad, because sometimes they think they're starting to be an encumbrance. And that's a catch-22 situation. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of distractions now. In the old days, you had, at the most, the radio, BFM or something like that. Oh, those days, you didn't have BFM, but you had something, LTM.
Battery or wine, the clock.
So now you have so much entertainment. People are distracted with digital stuff everywhere. And that seems to be their world. They don't want to be involved with sort of the
nitty-gritty
of the human interaction. Now, the elderly are not just going to lie down and let them walk over them. And there's a lot of elderly are actually getting digitally enabled. They're all getting on their iPhones and all that, and Skyping their kids and
Facebooking.
Absolutely, they are all there. But these are the let's say the more educated segment of the elderly. The less educated are the ones that suffer. They suffer when they are retired from looking after their grandchildren, but they're too old to look after their great-grandchildren, they become totally retired, i.e. they've outlasted their friends and siblings, and they're really lonely. Their children are not around because they're still busy working. So it's a little bit of a quandary where and who will entertain that segment of society.
Is there a solution?
I'm sure Paul's touched on it a little bit just now by trying to sensitize the young, the school kids, into being more interactive with the elder generation, and that helps a lot. But sometimes you need the elder person to understand that they have to step out and interact with people too. The problem is there's a whole cohort of elderly who still think, you come to me, I don't come to you. But if they can change their mindset, and I think the new cohort, the next cohort, the baby boomers, they'll have this mindset. They'll say, hey, I want to go out and mix with you guys rather than wait for you to come to see me.
Is that a very old school Asian thing, do you think?
Yeah, I think this is the traditional way.
And the other thing which I find, Paul, you said touch on, this is a cultural thing that we have to nurture from primary school. Unfortunately, when we were brought up, we were under the kind of like a understanding that our parents live with us, we look after them, and then so it's all under that. But in the Western culture, obviously, when your parents are, you send them to kind of old folks' home and that sort of thing, which is not so prevalent in Eastern culture, is getting increasingly more common. So that's the kind of dilemma that the young has, because on one hand, you are influenced by the Western culture of how to handle your parents or aging parents. On the other hand, there's this Eastern necessity to be part of the family and then live together.
Filial piety.
But I wouldn't worry too much about that, George, because in Germany, the very interesting situation is happening. You've seen what happens in the West, where people are becoming more nuclear. I mean, just living separately.
So it's shifting back towards the kind of.
But as the house prices have gone up in Germany, they can't afford to live outside, and they've stayed on. And now they're having more and more three-generational homes. That means three generations living in the same house simply because housing is so expensive. So in a way, by default, this might happen in Malaysia too.
Is that necessarily a good thing? I don't know.
It may be.
It really depends. We have to all coexist under one roof. I mean, it happened back in the day, didn't it? Yeah. I mean, a lot of people did that. We've just become very, very choosy and picky. Spoiled. We'll come back and discuss this. We're discussing life expectancy. A study from Imperial College together with the WHO has found that the South Korean women will be the first in the world to have an average life expectancy of above 90. So we'll come back and have that discussion. Dr. Philip Poy and Dr. George Lee in the studio with me. LTY, stay on the line. I have your question that's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasivi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio. It's Friday, together with Dr. Philip Poy, a consultant geriatrician, joining us to discuss life expectancy, actually. The Lancet has published a study where they have found that South Korean women will be the first in the world to have an average life expectancy above 90 by the year 2030. Mm-hmm. Who came in second, George? France.
France came in second. Japan has been, like, you know, for many years has been number one, and France is second. I mean, surely, you know, a study like this will open up opportunity for countries to learn what are they doing right and then what are someone else doing wrong, like USA.
Okay. Hi, LTY. How are you?
LTY.
Yes,
good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Dr. George.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dr. Paul.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Philip Poy.
Hi, Poy. Okay. I'm now 34, right? I'm still waiting for my great-grandchildren, okay, Dr. Paul?
Okay.
I'm still hoping, you know? I'm 34 now. I'm still hoping for my great-grandchildren, all right? Now, my topic is about diet and exercise for elderly people, all right? Mm. Now, I have been, I tell you my experience, okay? Now, you see, I'm 34. I'm not on any medication. My cholesterol, my sugar level, my cholesterol, sugar level, blood pressure, all normal, you see? So I'm not on any medication. So I think I can last for another 10 years, all right? Mm. Okay, now, my question is this. Now, for this I share with elderly people who are listening, all right? Mm-hmm. You see how I spend my day, all right? I spend 3 hours on physical exercise, and physical activity and exercise. I sleep from 9 to 5. Very consistent, very consistent. I never miss plus or minus 15 minutes. That means from that aspect, I got enough sleep, all right?
Okay.
Once you have enough sleep, means your body repairs itself, all right? Then nutrition. I've done a lot of research on nutrition. I'm finding my own genomics or genetics, all right? Now, Dr. George,
yes.
You talk about smoking, but you cannot. No,
you're not alluding that smoking extended your.
No, let me tell my point of view,
sure.
All right? You see, one thing, it is a gene, okay? Second thing, it is the immunity. I think certain people are born with such thing, all right?
Okay, LTY, you have a question? Do you have a question for us?
Wait. Let me tell you, okay? I'm not advocating smoking, all
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
My grandmother smoked 75 years, okay?
Okay.
My father smoked more than 60 years.
Do you
years.
Smoke?
Don't
ask that question.
60 years. Yes,
all right.
All my things are normal. Now my question is this. Mm. It's about nutrigenetic and exercise, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, are we elderly people eating the right thing or not?
Sure.
You see, very often you study a diet, why people got cardiovascular. It's because of their diet, because of their ratio of ratio of omega-3, omega-6.
Okay, LTY, we don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to take your question as what is a good diet?
What's a good diet?
Thank you very much.
Right,
all right, there you go, Dr. Philip. What would you say is a good diet for the elderly?
Well, I think the first thing you have to worry about is whether you keep your teeth or not. Because
Well, people don't care, you know, a lot of us don't worry about dental care, right?
Yeah.
Dental care is so important.
Indeed.
And I'm starting to realize that as doctors, medical science has left it to the dentist, actually. But actually, for us, we have to be aware that the teeth contribute a lot to disease as you get older.
Mm.
We are noticing that if you have poor dentition, you're more likely to have Alzheimer's. If you have poor dentition, you're more likely to get pneumonias. You know, and that tells you you could also be nutritionally deficient because you don't have teeth to chew.
To chew.
You can't get to go to the toilet regularly like Mr. YTL because you don't have enough teeth to chew the fiber, yeah. And then you end up with a lot of problems otherwise after that. So teeth, health care of the teeth, go and see your dentist. I'm not a dentist myself, so you don't come to see me. But go and see your dentist because I think a regular gentle check to maintain your teeth, at least 16 teeth, will keep you out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So nutrition-wise, I think, George, you have something to...
LTY pointed out really good points about, you know, he keeps himself very occupied. He said physical activity for 3 hours. It's like, how many of us
have... I think minus that? The smoking. Yeah, minus the smoking, that's right. Like LTY, that's right. We will beat the South Korean woman.
Correct, yeah. LTY said that he's, you know, has got good genes, and all, but not everyone has got good genes. Sure. And then therefore, you know, it is impossible to assume that everyone's going to do that. And the thing is, what we are worried about is that when you pass that phase of you are capable of, you know, looking after yourself, you will have a phase that you're unable to look after yourself. And that's a part where you need the medical care. And that's a part when you need the social, emotional care from the family.
If you have a question, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp us on 016-201-9000. We were talking about diet just now.
Yes. And John's got a good point here. Actually trying, as geriatricians, we're trying to get people to have a better life expectancy. But actually, more importantly, it's a disability-free life expectancy.
So quality of life.
Absolutely. You want to narrow that morbidity index, that bit where you're really ill and you need help, to the minimum. Mm. That means I always said, we want you to keep going until you're 97 and then go out in the field, play football and get struck by lightning and die. That's what you want to do. You know, nice
I want
and
to
quick.
Die in my sleep.
That's nice too.
Everybody
but
wants that.
Nobody gets there. Not everybody gets there.
Not too many.
You know, I've always wondered, why is it that women have a longer life expectancy compared to the men?
Great question. That's what I really want
time.
To know. That's
every right. country.
Dr. George is very interested in this.
Yeah, very interested in this. This is a secret, right? It's like, you know, everybody blames that men take more risk, they smoke more, and then they drink more, they actually have more homicide, they're more depressed, and then, you know, all these things. Is it really true that that's the reason why consistently across all the countries there is a 5-year gap between men and women life expectancy?
We have to admit that women are stronger.
In what way?
In terms of their ability to survive. Because, you know, they have to cope with childbirth, which is the most stressful thing you can think about, to maintain the population at large and to keep them going. But having said that, the life expectancy of men and women are actually narrowing. Mm. The difference is coming together.
Yes, and that is what the research is saying.
Yes, why?
And the reason for that is because women are assuming roles similar to men. I mean, they're smoking more. Mm-hmm. They're going into riskier occupations. You now hear of female soldiers in the mm-hmm. army. That sort of thing is high risk.
So what you're suggesting is rather than men catching up, is actually women declining in some ways?
I guess you could say that.
Or maybe some of the men are assuming women roles.
It's true.
And then also, the house.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I'm going to plug a little bit of a.
Gender equality is evident in your life expectancy.
That's right.
Data.
Eventually, it will be equalized anyway, right? Okay. I mean, just conveniently, I'm particularly interested in this because on the 18th of January, I'm giving a talk at Monash University for the open day.
March.
Sorry. I'm demented. I need to see you actually. For, you know, cognitive tests or for my memory tests. Okay, so you know, for 18th of March, is to give a talk, and then one of the things, that interesting thing that I want to talk about is this life, treatment seeking behavior. I really think that's one of the reasons why that men actually lives shorter is because of these. Culture of, you know, have to man up, you know, you don't necessarily have to seek help because you have to tough it out. And then that actually delays a lot of conditions until it becomes serious before they seek help. And I think culturally that's changing. That one of the reasons why I believe the gap between men and women life expectancy is narrowing because culturally we begin to accept that men, it's okay for men to go and see doctors, even just for checkups.
Or the wives are doing a better job, the partners are doing a better job in getting them to get to seek some
help. I think maybe the partners are pushing them harder.
Yes, and it's also awareness, right? It's awareness, getting educated about these things. Coming to Malaysia, national average is life expectancy was 74.7 last year, up from 72.2 in the year 2000. By ethnicity, this is interesting. The Chinese female is living the longest amongst everybody, 79.9. The male, Chinese male, 75. The the Malay community comes in next, with the females living at 76 and the males at 71. And of course, the Indian female at 76, the male at 67. So technically, the Chinese female has the longest life expectancy in Malaysia, and the Indian male has the lowest life expectancy.
67?
Yes.
Yes.
Dr. Philip, you would have been exposed to all of this. Could you help us make some sense of these numbers?
No, is it, you know,
it's quite straightforward.
Nature or nurture?
It's a little bit of both, but mainly because if you look historically, a lot of the Indian men were who were imported from South India to do the work in the plantations earlier on in the century, the last century, and that has changed so much because the labor-intensive rubber estates have all changed to oil palm oil, and they've been moving out into cities, getting jobs that are better paid and much more sedentary. But they have continued to have the habit of eating like their forefathers. So, you know, the banana leaves, that's quite a calorie-packed meal. And if you just continue that, you're going to get into all these lifestyle diseases we can see around us.
Are you not concerned? Because now if you look at banana leaf places, it's multi-ethnic. You see,
so eventually everyone will be exposed to the same kind
of... But then again, the other reasons are probably not going to have a meal like that on a daily basis.
Quite, yeah.
Whereas it's staple to the community.
Yes.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons. I think the Indian men will catch up, and you know, I don't think genetics plays that much of a role in this. I think many people are getting more aware about their diet, and they're much more careful about gobbling down food as quickly as before. And I think, it'll improve. I have hope for the Indian men, and you should too.
It concerns me a little bit, you know, for the longest living ethnic group is Chinese women,
the female.
79.
Yes.
And then on the other end of the spectrum, Indian men, 67. That's a big gap in the same country.
Correct.
That we're exposed to the same environmental pollutants and the food and everything, but yet such a big gap, and that concerns me a little
bit. I need to see the Minister of Health and ask you this very important question.
It's a frugal style, lifestyle, disciplined lifestyle of many women that allow them to have the longer lifestyle.
The Chinese women.
Life expectancy. Yeah, I think they're more disciplined. Like Mr. LTY.
LTY,
he has a very strict routine. He sleeps within 15 minutes of that 9 to 5. And he does his exercise every day. He has his smoke. He has this and whatever. He's got a very strict routine. And I think discipline helps a lot.
So the Chinese male and the female are doing, they got it right. Actually, going the right, George. I can't. Not sure about.
I'm not sure about me. Do I fall in towards the Indian male or do I fall towards the Chinese female? I think probably towards the Indian male at this stage.
I don't know. It's Stuart Choi. The Chinese Choi. Don't say such things now.
Well, the thing is, I think that also reflects to some degree how affluent the society is. In access to healthcare and that sort of thing. What do you think about that? You know, it's like access to healthcare.
We'll come back and find out more up next. We are discussing the aging population. If you have a question, share it with us, or have a comment, or you want to share something with us, call us. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp us on 016-201-9000. Dr. Philip Poy, consultant geriatrician, and Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist, in the studio with us. Coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodi. If you have just joined us, welcome Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and joining us today, Dr. Philip Poy, consultant geriatrician. We're discussing a recent study that was published in The Lancet that suggests South Korean women will be the first in the world to have an average life expectancy above 90 by 2030. And it will be the first time we will break that 90 barrier, apparently. Mm. Aren't you not proud of the South Korean women? Well, you know what? I'm very proud of the Chinese female living in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Average lifespan of 79.9, probably the highest at the moment. So we were discussing earlier on about, George, you wanted to find out more about...
access to healthcare.
Access to healthcare.
And then early on, something that concerns me a little bit is that, you know, we talked about this quite a few times, about how ready are we when we are facing an aging nation. So how many care of elderly physicians do we have in the country? Mm-hmm. And then also, what sort of social facilities do we have when you come to aging nations?
Well, we come to nearly 25, 26 geriatricians in this country.
Serving how many?
Most of them are now based in there's a split between private and public. But on the whole, we don't have enough.
Do we have a ratio for that at the moment? One geriatrician
It's irrelevant in this country because we need to have more geriatricians.
Okay.
Simply, we need to get healthcare services for the elderly sort of switched on in many, many Ministry of Health hospitals as well as private hospitals as well. So we are really short. But the problem is not just geriatricians. It's getting the curriculum right, as Paul Jambanadhan mentioned earlier. Teaching the medical students about elderly care so that they are ready for the next demographic shift as we are going to have to face in 2030. So, yes, I think that's what's the most important thing. Why Chinese women live longer and why Indian men live not so long, it may be because of where that, you know, they have a rural urban disparity.
Yeah,
because, you know, most people in the rural areas have access to basic healthcare, but not to expert healthcare, because those are all centered in towns
or big cities.
Yeah. So that's probably why, when now more and more people are living in cities, that you'll see those disparities change and it'll narrow down and everybody will come up to be in one big clump.
Yeah. And it's interesting, in 2035, how we will be living will be also quite interesting. Caregiver stress is something that's extremely important. You yourself mentioned it earlier, Dr. Philip. I mean, you're looking after your mother now. Have we addressed that?
No, not very well, I must say. I realized that only when I had to look after my mum.
When you're on the other side of the fence,
yes,
right? That's right. Because for 25 years, you are seeing patients and you kind of like assume that the social setup, it's all adequate for that. You know, the whole structure of the maid and then the daughter-in-law, and then, you know, whenever there's access to neighbors and that sort of thing. How robust is the structure at the moment whenever you're on the other side of the fence?
That's the big question now, is how many caregivers are going through the same sort of thing I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
Where you suddenly have a curtailment of your own free time.
True.
Where you can't, you've got a new responsibility, a new job, basically.
And you're fit and you're healthy and you can still do things.
Well, fortunately for me, I've just retired. So it's just, if you want to time it well, my mum timed it very well.
Was it intentional?
Well, I hope not.
No. Was it intentional for you to kind of time your retirement so that you at least spend more time, you know, taking on this responsibility of looking after your mother?
Well, I retired. My mum had a stroke prior to my retirement, so it was just in time.
Okay.
So I thought it was a new job. I took it with gusto, and I thought, this is not bad. I'm learning from the other side what I've been telling all my patients and families to handle, how they handle it. Mm. And but it's actually more than, we don't do enough. The medical fraternity have not done enough. We really need to get our act together as to supporting the informal caregiver. It's easy enough to hire someone to care.
A maid, but a maid is just helper, right?
Okay.
What are the challenges you face at the moment?
Well, you've still got to monitor the caregiver. The caregiver is sometimes semi-professional or not fully professional. I mean, they're not nurses. If they're nurses, you still have to watch them because some nurses have not had any geriatric nursing training. Our curriculum is very short in terms of that. So here we have this big discrepancy. We are ready for acute diseases, heart attacks and all that, but we're not ready for the long run, the after the stroke, after the heart attack. How do we care for these people? And that's where we need some nurses now to learn about these things so that they are equipped to help the caregivers.
Back in the day,
educate the caregivers.
Yeah, yeah. In India, in China, we're probably still happening where the community, it's a community responsibility for the elderly. Do you think we will ever get there?
The problem is more and more of Malaysians are actually in urban areas. I think there's a huge urban sprawl going through Malaysia now. If you keep driving from Kuala Lumpur to Klang, you see houses everywhere along the way, and it's 30, 40 kilometres. You don't see countryside anymore. And because of this, urbanization creates sort of a lot of people become less friendly. The kampung spirit is missing. And in fact, in Singapore, they're trying to re-establish the kampung feel amongst their neighbourhoods so that people will start to interact again, help each other out, and cooperate to work in this way. So in Singapore, they're having this integrated... They want an integrated package so that the elderly are involved. And I think that's one way of going forward, getting the elderly back into the system, getting the society to understand that elderly are still part of the system and not lepers waiting to expire. I think that's one of the biggest issues.
Okay.
Trying to convince people that they are still relevant.
So, you know, it's mind-boggling for me because we have all this happening around the world. We know we're getting there, but we're not aggressive enough. Do you think we're aggressive enough trying to prepare ourselves?
The word aggressive, maybe proactive?
I think you need to be aggressive. 2035 is not very far from now.
Yeah.
It requires a ton of planning.
Absolutely.
On I think all aspects.
The problem is there are so many issues that the government has to face. And I guess they're being distracted by many, many other issues. But this is an issue that won't go away because we get older and the baby boomers will become an issue eventually in the next 10 years. And I'm sure that by the noise that they create, I think it'll happen. But it takes time. People react rather than proactively deal with these things sometimes.
So what do you think we should do now? If there's one immediate thing that we should do...
Yeah, I mean, if you're helping to plan this...
What would be priority?
The priority is actually education of those who go into caregiving, i.e. the nurses, the medical people. They should really learn how to handle...
So you handle
old people.
Yeah, so you reckon that one of the ways actually is to enhance the number of people involved in looking after older people. Is there anything
else? Sensitize them.
Yeah. So cultural change and then sensitize them to equip them to look after the older people. Yeah. Anything else that is important? You know, apart from just medical and caregivers that you reckon? Do you think we're saving enough to face the old age?
I think in the current situation, we have already been seeing in the newspapers that a lot of Malaysians haven't saved enough. The EPF has been stating a lot and putting out newspaper advertisements to say, come, we will help you with your retirement planning, because a lot of people finished their retirement savings within 5 to 10 years of retiring. So, yes, we have an issue with finance.
Yeah, because, you know, in the UK system, you know, there's always that social security safety net if you're not saving enough. In your 25 years of experience working in UH, when you face a problem, when somebody clearly, you know, haven't saved enough and facing, you know, medical problems on top of that, you know, burden their family, how do you handle that? Clearly, it's a very distressing situation to handle.
Extremely distressing.
Which brings me to Faiz has actually WhatsApp to say, you don't know how many children leave their parents at the hospital. It's an opportunity for them to not take care of them.
Is that true?
Well, there's a stage of granny dumping now. We call it granny dumping.
There's even a term for it.
Because, you know, they'll just put them in hospital and leave a false address and a false phone number, and then you can't find them anymore. And social workers have to go and search for, you know, ways of placing them after that. I think people in HKL can tell you more about this than
yourself. Yeah. Okay, right. We have one more text to say, more older women means poor daughter-in-laws. Okay, we know where our priorities are. I think economic, there's another one. I think economic status plays an important role. The Indians I know spend more time trying to bring income and that they do not care very much for their health. And that is coming in from...
Do you agree?
Pervy. Possibly from a demographic, from the urban, you know, poor, those socioeconomically challenged, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, one is you don't have enough money.
They're holding two jobs. And
correct.
Working
and two,
really
how do you even eat healthy? Mm. How do you even feed your family healthy? I mean, healthy to eat healthy can be pricey.
Costly.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are some of the SMSs
comments
coming in. What else would you like to? You were going to say something just now.
Well, there's a new proposal that we eat more fruit and vegetables, up to 10 portions a day.
I saw that.
Did you see that?
That's right. It's the, then,
I thought it was 8, Dr.
No,
Phil.
No, it's 10. It's like, you know, it came out about 10 days ago. And then, the CNN actually went around town and asked people, you know, how many portions do you think this is? And everyone said, do you eat enough? And everyone came up with about 4. It's kind of what they perceive to be enough. They said double that. And everyone just said, how is that possible?
It's quite challenging because you have to really change our mindset about what food means to us. Mm. Yeah.
Even for us,
yes.
It's a challenge, isn't it? So running out of time, can I have a message from you, Dr. Philip, on aging gracefully, perhaps? And, it doesn't mean that I want to live up to the 79.9 years like the Chinese female, but as you said, I want to...
Or 90.
I don't want to live to 90 either, George. He wants to live up to 250, Dr. Phil. I'm not sure how that's going to happen. But, you know, as you say, quality of life.
Absolutely. I think the biggest secret, I think, lies with my dear aunt who lives up in Penang. She's 92 and still very active. The secret behind it is social participation. She learned how to sing at the age of 70. So that she could join the church choir.
Wow.
And by joining the church choir, you have a mix of all these younger people there. And now this 90-year-old, has got friends of 40, 50, 60, 70 years of age. And because you have this longitudinal age mix in your friendships, you have a whole gamut of friends that can come in and support you at different levels. She's quite a big lady. Maybe you should interview her one day.
Of course, definitely. George?
Well, when I saw this topic, I really thought, you know, headline, life expectancy to break 90 barriers by 2030. I really thought this is a medical triumph, you know, because whatever you say, we come a really short time to achieve such success in pushing the boundaries. And I think probably by our time, whenever we are in aging time, and then we can see that figure pushed to 100. But I think one thing that opens up today is it's very obvious that we, in some way, are not quite ready.
Yep.
And then that is something that I think will create discussions, like, you know, shows like today. And I really think that it's healthy for us to start talking about it and start changing our mindset.
Okay. Our age, did you say? I am not your age. Yeah, George.
What I meant, Philip and I. That's what I said. It's very obvious that we're not in the
that
same
doesn't make
age
sense
category.
Either. Nice one. Thank you both, gentlemen, for joining me today. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, and Dr. Philip Poy, consultant geriatrician on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.